Hello everyone and welcome back to the Damage Report. Not just a new day, but a new week and a new era of accountability. No, not at all. But we're here. I'm here. I'm in the studio. And can I just tell, like, I've been giving you updates on the studio, how like now there's this high-pitched droning whining noise that apparently is just permanent. I cannot prove, there's no way I can prove this, but it's darker in this room and there's no reason for that to be true. I don't know what happened, but I feel it's like darker. The walls and lights are closing in on me.
No, it's darker. It's darker. And there's like a hand reaching out behind you. Is what? There some?
I didn't do anything. And there are lights on, but somehow it is definitely darker in here. What is going, and the ceiling's lower. What the hell?
This is very anyway. Stranger Things. This is how it begins.
It is. I actually went to this live Stranger Things event for Valentine's Day. My wife brought me, it was pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
Didn't feel as scared there as I do at work now. Anyway, Francesca's here. Hey, Francesca, how's it
What's
going?
What's going on? Happy Fantastic Monday. Let's do it all again.
Happy Valentine's Day. How was your show yesterday?
So good. We had Eugene Daniels of Politico who gave us sort of his thoughts on the impeachment, explained the whole witnesses thing. I know we're going to get into it. So it was a really good show. Matt Lieb was on, and everyone should listen to the Bituation Room podcast.
Awesome. Sounds great. And many of you watching probably know I appeared on Ben Dixon's show this morning. That was a lot of fun. We sometimes refer to this show as the morning show, but no, that was really much more of a morning show, although he's on the East Coast, of course. But anyway, lots of exciting stuff going on, including, by the way, a little bit later on, we have the 19th anniversary of TYT being a thing. How exciting is that? Woo. We've been around a long time, 19 years. And so later on today, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern time at tyt.com/live and Twitch and YouTube and all of that, we're gonna be sort of recounting a little bit of the history of TYT, mostly just having fun times talking. We always plan out a bunch of stuff and what it ends up being is just reminiscing together, but it's always a ton of fun. I'm gonna be there at that first hour with Cenk Uygur and Anna Kasparian, but we're also gonna be joined by JR and Aaron and Dave and Steve and Ben and Brett and a whole bunch of people who've appeared over the years. So that's gonna be a lot of fun and it's coming up a little bit later on. As Marsha Fella points out, it's a Turkiversary, everyone. So that should be a lot of fun. Anyway, as was alluded to by Francesca, we got a big hour. We're gonna be talking about what happened over the weekend, both with the witnesses and the eventual end of Trump's trial. I'm like not giving you spoilers because I know a lot of you avoid learning the news so that I can tell you what happened. So thank you for not knowing what happened in that trial. I'm gonna blow your minds, people. But anyway, and then we've got other stuff too. The LAPD is being absolutely terrible. Updates on the pandemic. And then after the show, for our tier two and tier three members on YouTube, the top 10 things Trump should have been impeached and convicted over that he was not. So Francesca's gonna be joining me for that. And it should be a lot of fun. Apparently, Francesca's got thoughts, and I'm here for it.
Always.
So anyway, with that, Francesca, you want to jump into this thing?
Yes.
Okay, let's do. It's definitely darker. I'm looking at my face. What happened? Anyway, okay, let's do this thing. We sort of knew that Trump's trial wasn't going to end well, but we hadn't got our hopes up. That was sort of the whole point. And then the Dems went and got our hopes up over the weekend because all this new stuff started to come out that suddenly meant, wait, don't we need to have witnesses to talk about these new revelations? And let me tell you a little bit about the spicy stuff that should have necessitated witnesses. We found out about this phone call between Kevin McCarthy and Donald Trump. It was an expletive laced phone call, apparently, so that's fun. With Kevin McCarthy, while the US Capitol was under attack, talking to Trump about it, Trump said that the rioters cared more about the election results than McCarthy did, which is an amazing way to describe people who were like hunting his vice president through the halls of Congress while that phone call was going on. He also apparently said originally, it's just Antifa. And McCarthy had to tell him, no, it's not Antifa. And Trump didn't believe that it was Antifa because then he immediately turned to these people care more about the election results. So did he think that Antifa cared more? I don't know. But anyway, McCarthy insisted that the rioters were Trump supporters and begged Trump to call them off. Because again, we've all forgotten this, but back at the time, everyone in the country knew that Trump was responsible for this and had to call them off. Many people just conveniently forgot about it between the 6th and today. Anyway, at one point, he said to Trump, this is McCarthy saying, "Who the F do you think you're talking to?" But the thing was, Trump apparently knew who he was talking to. It was McCarthy, who immediately started licking his boot as soon as we moved past the 6th. And so we found out about that. We found out about Michael Vanderveen, one of the Trump attorneys, lying about Trump not knowing about the danger that Pence was under. We've got people who like could attest to that. And so Francesca, they did this little vote, and it seemed for about a half an hour that they were going to have witnesses. And I know that like we're way past this now, but when it looked like they were going to be witnesses, what did you think about that? Did you think that that could possibly change the result, or that it would matter in some way?
No, officially no. My official stance was it would definitely not change the outcome. It might have altered it a little bit, but not led to an actual conviction. But I was interested, you know, to be honest, I was very curious, and I thought that the week had gone pretty well, and there was really damning evidence that everyone should see probably multiple times. So I didn't feel one way or another. I mean, what is it to me? I wasn't like, oh, well, there goes my week, you know. It didn't matter. I was like, oh, okay, no. That if they think it's important, then it's important. And sure, I'd love to hear, you know, from people like either Kevin McCarthy himself, because that phone call is insane. Like, can we understand that that phone call is nuts? Like, this is again a Trump loyalist. No one can get through to him. No one can get through to him to say, you are maybe doing the wrong thing here, bud. Maybe call off your dogs. What dogs? Yeah. I don't have dogs.
They're Antifa like, dogs.
They're Antifa dogs. Antifa's got dogs. Talk to them about dogs. Hillary Clinton's got dogs. You want to talk about dogs? Like, no. So this is, I mean, it's perfect. And I think one of the other lines of questioning that Susan Collins and Mitt Romney, who ended up voting, you know, to convict, you know, they were asking basically, did the president know that the vice president was in danger before he like tweeted out yet another Mike Pence should have done the right thing, quote unquote, even though it's not within the vice president's power to withhold the counting of the electors. So, yeah. And so these are really critical pieces of information. The problem is, I'm not sure if Mike Pence had been killed that day that any of this would be different. I'm serious about that. You could have definitely gotten a few more senators. I don't know if you could have gotten the full 10 you needed to actually convict.
Yeah. And I know every time we say something like that, and we've said things like that quite a bit, there will be some people who be like, oh, you're being hyperbolic. Or so I'm being hyperbolic. Francesca's a woman, so many of them would call her hysterical because they can't cloak their misogyny. But the idea would be you're going too far. But like, what is the... what's the counter proposal to that? What happened that was too far and it really did turn people against him on the right? Like some people briefly seemed to care when the Billy Bush thing came out, sort of. And it's sort of sad that that was kind of the thing that brought us the closest to that. But like Trump's all the stuff with Ukraine and everything, like they didn't impeach him over that. We got no votes basically except for Mitt Romney. Like there really is nothing. And so, yeah, we get to speculate about what if they had actually like kneecapped Nancy Pelosi, or they left Mike Pence hanging outside of the building. Like people can say, no, that would break through and Sean Hannity would take stock of what he had helped to build. No, but you don't know that. You really don't. That everything is contingent. If they had killed Mike Pence, it would have just been, you'd have more Republicans more sure that it was Antifa that had actually done it. There is an evasion for everything. And now, as of right, oh, sorry, continue.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I'm not sure that, you know, look, if we're gonna spend a week per senator working on each one's individual like heart and soul and trying to like I said, morality whisper to them, I'm not sure that's a bad exercise. I'm not saying that even getting three more Republicans over to the convict side wouldn't have been worth it, because you know, at least maybe then we can like have an actual opposition party that doesn't believe in insurrecting, you know, a revolt inside the Capitol building, right? Like maybe that was worth it. I just like, I think the calculation was made, and I know we're gonna talk about it, but there was either the calculation that senators are tired and they wanna go home, which I definitely think was part of it, which is like, no, you have to do your job. That's the point. But also the calculation of, we wanna just get things done. We want the Biden administration to move forward with nominations, move forward with the COVID-19 plan. And we know that Republicans, because they are completely bad faith, are going to stretch anything out as long as they can, the witness process out as long as they can, in order to basically deny any kind of aid to the American people, which they already don't believe in, and they already stay up till 4 in the morning trying to introduce amendment after amendment after amendment to try and chip away at that necessary aid.
That's
so
true.
It's a hard calculation to make. It's hard to know how to get through to these people.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Throughout the week of the trial, there were a number of people, the House impeachment managers, some people that they brought forward to speak, who I thought did a pretty good job. Representative Raskin got a lot of credit for much of what he said. That said, he was involved eventually in the decision to not have witnesses. Now he is being asked questions about that, and here is what he had to say about what witnesses could have possibly demonstrated and how it could have been turned against them.
We won that vote. We were going to proceed to do it. And then the Republicans stipulated to allow the evidence to come into the record. Now, you ask about some other people who might have gotten up there and lied. We don't know what Kevin McCarthy would have said. I mean, that was her record of what he was telling people. What he told people was that he had called Trump to say, "You got to get us out of this. Hell, these people are here." Trump said, "It's Antifa." McCarthy said, "No, it's not Antifa, Mr. President. It's your people. You got to get us out of here." To which Trump said something like, "Well, maybe they just care more about the election than you do." I.e., Trump knew exactly what they were doing. He knew that that mob, which he had deployed, was there, you know, occupying people's offices and threatening Congress. So it was there for everybody to see.
Right.
So we could have had 1,000 witnesses, but that could not have overcome the kinds of silly arguments that people like McConnell and Capito are hanging their hats on. They're trying to have it both ways.
Really fast note, if you're watching this later, I want you to go back and take a look at Chuck Todd's face as he's doing this weird pose. I'm gonna ask you a follow-up. It's really annoying. It's really annoying, and I can't believe he still has a job. But anyway, you're right, I think, Francesca, that some of them just want to move on and do stuff like the COVID bill. And certainly the Republicans would have dragged this out. And I think that Raskin's right that they would have brought a bunch of nonsense, you know, witnesses on. But like, can we just stop for a second and be like, well, then it kind of sucks that, like, for the first time ever, an outgoing president tried to overturn the result in every way that he could until finally deploying a violent mob, and it just doesn't mean anything. It doesn't lead to anything. A couple of Republicans did turn against it, and we'll get to that vote. But like, because we have other things to do, or because the Republicans are like so fundamentally operating in bad faith perpetually, that we just got to move on and ignore the fact that this is a historic thing that just happened. Mm-hmm. That isn't gonna go away. Those crazies are still out there. They want Trump to come back. And as of right now, he can come back. Ugh,
America. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, if you think about it, obviously, Raskin has a very good point, which is Kevin McCarthy could have got up and completely lied about any kind of phone call, which he apparently was telling multiple people, and he could have lied and said, no, I didn't say that. I didn't have a call. No, no, the president understood, right? What then, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was almost stronger that it came from secondhand because these Republicans are such bald-faced liars and they're such cowards and they're afraid of their base. They're afraid of the base that they helped create. That is a problem they have. That's a problem they've sicked on the American people. What happened on January 6th, I do believe, even though I'm cynical about the Senate, it is a fundamentally undemocratic institution. I'm not cynical about how much the Sixth tells us about what this country has always been and what we've allowed it to become in the last few decades with the rise of like extremist right-wing white supremacist nationalist organizations, like the ways that we've allowed this to fester. And now we're being faced with it. And with the ways we allowed an authoritarian wannabe dictator to basically not dog whistle, but openly call his goons on everybody. And now we have to deal with it. And it's the Republicans' problem, but it's everyone's problem. It's Democrats' problem as well. And so I don't think this is the end of the accounting for the Sixth. I know that there are people who are calling for a full investigation. There needs to be a full investigation. So the problem is like, you don't start by taking down the capo. Like you can't take down the head of the mafia. You don't take down the godfather first. You gotta go for the little guys, the guys with the horns, the ladies with the piano scarf, piano scarfs, piano key scarves, whatever that thing was. But you know, these are the people you go after and then you slowly chip away. These fools aren't gonna like indict their own. We know that.
Yeah, I know. And I get what you're saying, although it feels like, isn't that what we did for years with, you know, Cohen and Manafort and Stone and all of them? Like,
yeah,
a lot of them ended up getting pardoned by the capo because we didn't all go all the way through. Yeah. Trump got off because, of course, he was going to get off. We sort of knew that, still had to do this. In the end, a total of 57 senators ended up voting to convict Trump of inciting the insurrection that took place at the US Capitol on January 6th. 57, the majority. But again, that doesn't really count for anything because there's always some higher bar that you need to reach for there to be consequences. And that includes 7 Republicans, Richard Burr, Bill Cassidy, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney, Ben Sasse, and Pat Toomey, which for the record is 2 more than I thought there would be. I don't know if you had sort of guessed or had a hunch, Francesca, but I thought they'd get 5. And so I'm a little bit surprised at Burr and, I mean, I guess Cassidy had sort of implied earlier on that maybe he was a possible, but 57, by far the most ever in a trial like this. I mean, up until last year, it was just Mitt Romney is the only person that had ever voted to convict someone of their party. So this is historically bipartisan, but it's not 67, so Trump gets to go free.
But that's such an important point, what you just mentioned. And is like, that's insane that Romney was the only, Romney gets a place in the history books as the first sitting senator to vote for the conviction of a president of the opposite party. That's insane. Like what that tells you about how broken this country is. And like, I'm sorry, founding fathers, but y'all didn't have it all figured out. You know, maybe it was when you also owned slaves. But it's like you set up this tool to hold presidents accountable, but within a two-party system, which is fundamentally undemocratic, like we're no more partisan or nonpartisan than we were in other impeachments, right? Like this is the most bipartisan impeachment in the history of the United States, which just tells you that impeachment is not a good tool within a two-party system and definitely with an unrepresentative Senate, 100 people who do not accurately represent the per capita, like the people, the actual people, right? They represent more land and cows than actual people. And look, cows are some shady MFers, but they probably would have voted to acquit, but I don't know. Did they? The point is like, you know, we need to revisit these systems.
I agree. It's a terrible tool. All of them are terrible tools, both the tools we have for accountability and those who should be using them. But anyway, but we don't have, I don't know what we're supposed to have. Maybe we can have some sort of open conversation about, since none of this works, what should we have? Yeah. But I do want to piggyback onto your unrepresentative thing. There's nothing I love more, I guess, than reading graphics like this that sort of demonstrate a point, but are completely pointless because it doesn't matter. But the 57 senators who voted to convict Trump represent about 202 million people, while the 43 senators who voted to acquit represent only about 125. In total, the block of senators who voted to convict represent 76.7 million more people than the block who voted not guilty. More votes, by the way, than what Trump got in the election. Whether you know how to round or not, it's more. And that doesn't matter. None of it matters. Nothing matters. But there's always some higher number you need to get. It's always just not quite enough. Even like getting the Senate, not quite enough. Getting 60, not quite enough. That's just the sort of way that it works.
But that's really good that you bring up the graphic. I mean, it is important because it's the ways that, you know, when we start to understand how our systems in this country work against us, how the economic system that we have works against us, it starts to feel less hopeless. And I know that sounds weird, but every time I understand, you know, but true, but it's rather than like people are evil and things are bad. It's like, no, the system is designed for them to like be able to get away with this amount of greed and minority rule. And that allows us at least a path forward. Like, okay, we know what we need to reform. We know what we need to rein in. So for me, I actually feel better when I see that because I'm like, oh, it's not just that everyone's awful. It's that it's all designed not in the favor of democracy.
And to demonstrate your point, that graphic that's below you right now, US Senate acquits Donald Trump 43-57. It's good democracy. That's a good democracy right there. Oh, by the way, we were reading that list of the Republicans who voted to convict Donald Trump. Did you notice whose name wasn't on the list? The courageous man who would stand, the last defender of the Republican Party, someone who is willing to stick his neck firmly out of his shell and stand up to Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, was among the senators who voted to acquit him. And that's bad. But his argument for why he went back into hiding in his shell is even worse. So in this statement, he cited the Senate's lack of jurisdiction over impeachment proceedings of a former president as the reason for his vote to acquit. Oh, okay. So as if we couldn't have seen this coming, back when Trump was president, he was like, no, man, we can't do this now. We need to just wait. Like, let's just get to the inauguration and we'll deal with it then. I'm not gonna bring people back. I'm going to block it while he's president. Then as soon as he's not president, oh no, now the Constitution says we can't convict him. Really convenient the way that worked out. But he could do it because again, as we always say,
always has a plan. There's always a plan.
It does.
And I know it. It's in my waddle. And it will be revealed to everybody in due time. Am I doing it okay?
Now, voting to acquit is bad.
Yes.
Voting to acquit because of an excuse that you cooked up through your own behavior is worse. But you know what's worst? This statement, if President Trump were still in office, I would have carefully considered whether the House managers prove their specific charge. So he won't even say whether if he was president, if he would have convicted him. So he won't vote to convict him because of this excuse. But even in a hypothetical situation where the excuse wasn't there, he's not even saying that Trump did it.
Of course
not. He's not even admitting that. He's admitting nothing. He's giving nothing. Mitch McConnell, who people were like tripping over themselves to give credit to, and we were telling people not to do that, deserves no credit. He is just as cowardly as ever before. He didn't do anything in the end.
Except he did admit that Trump incited a riot. That's he did. He was.
But he didn't say that the charges were right.
Oh yeah, no, he has no role in holding him accountable. Oh, who is he? But a turtle out of a shell. But yeah, no, soon after saying that it was unconstitutional and that the Constitution said that he couldn't, that then he was like, you know, but there's no question that Trump incited a riot against the US Capitol. And it's like, cool, great. For your donors, I assume. And check cleared, cha-ching. One interesting thing we talked about on the podcast, the Bituation Room, was the idea that Senator Burr, for example, voted to convict, but after, I believe he might have been one of the senators to say that it was not constitutional to impeach a former president or to convict, to have a trial of a former president. But then he was like, but look, the body decided that it was constitutional. Mm-hmm. So per the body, like I went forward and was an impartial juror in this case because we already passed that hurdle. So that's, talk about like like actually doing your job, being dutiful to the Senate. Like if the Senate decides something, then that's the baseline for how you go forward. You don't get to go skip back a few steps and say, oh no, it was unconstitutional. Y'all already decided and voted as per the procedures, as per democracy, that it is constitutional. So Mitch, again, like he works only for himself. He works only to see, a small, just Tiny Tim cry. If Tiny Tim can die at the end, like, he does not want to ever not be Ebenezer Scrooge.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
And look, you're totally right. I think he would gladly like hold Tiny Tim's head under like the surface of a river. Oh my God, I'm drowning. But anyway, and I think that we're right to call him out. Let's give credit. You tell me, Francesca, how much credit? For the seven who did vote to convict, how much credit do they deserve?
I think a lot, actually. I mean, I think they deserve credit. I do. I absolutely do. I think that this is the step that we need to be taking for the Republican Party to actually show a little bit of leadership. Stop being cowards. They're not just cowards. They're cowards in that they will not stand up for what is morally and but like clearly right. But they're also afraid of this base. They're afraid of the base that they also went along with for so many years. And like, you know, I mean, Collins and Murkowski, like, I don't know, Susan Collins, just like, maybe they got their Brett Kavanaugh in, they got their beer drinker, they got their like frat boy into the Supreme Court. So whatever, they're tired.
Yeah, and by the way, I know some people will say, well, they can do this because they know he's not actually gonna get convicted. So it's sort of free, but it's not free in the Republican Party. Multiple of the senators who voted to convict him, Cassidy and I think Burr, were already censured immediately by their state parties. So, and this is gonna hurt them. He's gonna be attacking them. So I do think that they deserve some credit. And like even Murkowski and Collins, who were supposed to be the reasonable Republicans or whatever, who gave them the beer drinker and all that, didn't vote to convict him the first time. So as much as I like to say nothing matters, nothing counts, and that still remains almost entirely true, they voted this time, they didn't vote last time. So, you know, the sixth did have that effect at the very least. It doesn't necessarily matter, but in the history books at the very least, for whatever, you know, that's worth, more voted to convict him this time, so that's something. Lindsey Graham, who was never gonna vote to convict Trump, he's just one of the worst people around, was spreading lies throughout this entire process. Here's what he had to say after Trump was acquitted.
The trial record was a complete joke, hearsay upon hearsay, and we've opened Pandora's box to future presidents. And if you use this model, I don't know how Kamala Harris doesn't get impeached if the Republicans take over the House, because she actually bailed out rioters and one of the rioters went back to the streets and broke somebody's head open. So we've opened Pandora's box here and I'm sad for the country.
What?
Okay. So, because remember his whole thing, like, the Trump sending a mob that actually did ransack the place and actually did kill that's the exact same thing as anyone else doing anything, saying anything. And the one thing they keep saying is, well, Kamala Harris bailed out some people who had protested. So we're going to assume that was the literal worst people who did any of the protests or riots. So she supports literally anything that happened there, which by the way, still wasn't as bad as the Capitol attack. And that is their counter argument. So now, supposedly, they're going to impeach Kamala Harris when they take over because she bailed out some rioters at a different thing that then didn't go to the Capitol and kill people. That's his actual point. And then he layers on top of that, that makes him really sad that that's going to happen. He doesn't like that that's going to happen, even though if it does happen, which it seems madness that it would, you can expect that he's going to be a vigorous participant in the process.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the entire whataboutism around the Black Lives Matter movement was really hard to watch. It was really hard to see a legitimate and justifiable movement about something real, police brutality and the killing of unarmed Black Americans, get dragged into something that was a violent insurrection about something that was not real, which was the supposed stealing of the 2020 election, right? Like, so, yeah. And to see those being put on equal footing, which is actually arguably what senators, the Republican senators wanted to see, because it was in the second and third days when they were like, oh yeah, this is the stuff we can get behind. That first day was bad, but ooh, yeah, love this whataboutism. It just shows you the cynicism and the cruelty that Republicans are willing to go to. And I, let's not forget, like every time someone says Antifa, socialism, BLM, just show them images of the riots in the Capitol. That's it. Like, just please, over and over and over and over and over again. This is not done, but it is very sick to see the lengths that they will go to make a moral equivalence where there is none.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nancy Pelosi had this to say following what happened over the weekend.
I think our country needs a strong Republican Party. It's very important. And for him to have tried to have it every which way. But we will be going forward to make sure that this never happens again in terms of what were the to investigate and evaluate what caused this, and both in terms of its the motivation, but also in terms of the security that we have to have as we go forward, recognizing how inflaming even some of our elected officials can be.
Okay, so we'll turn to the investigation, all of that, whatever. But first of all, again, we need to have a strong Republican Party. What do you think about that, Francesca?
Excuse me, woo, getting all choked up. I agree with Nancy Pelosi. Look, I've never been the person who's
sad.
It's so sad, it's very difficult. You know, first it's like all of the ice cream in my fridge, and then and then it's this. Okay. I do think that the Republican Party needs to not be the party of insurrectionists. But I don't think you do that by handholding them. I think that having the kind of leadership that Jamie Raskin showed at times and others on the, you know, on the House manager side showed, but really the energy of AOC, I'm missing the energy of AOC. Stacey Plaskett, Representative Stacey Plaskett was close when she was like, we needed more senators with backbones, which I think is right. But we need the energy of AOC to just be like, we do not negotiate with insurrectionists. This has become the party of insurrectionists. Like, where do you stand? Like, what do you support? You know, the Confederate flag was flown inside the Capitol the first time it's ever been flown. Like, I need that energy. We need that moral leadership. And you don't really see it, and you certainly don't see it from Nancy Pelosi, who I don't know what we're protecting anymore. I don't know what we're trying to do. So,
yeah, the Republican Party, you're saying?
Yeah, I don't know what we want from them anymore.
What was the Republican Party before QAnon? Like the Tea Party? Was that good? Was that better? Maybe in some ways, it wasn't a responsible, serious party. They like in terms of their actual policies. The Republican Party has been in favor of tax cuts and cutting immigration. And that's really it. I guess dismantling
Obamacare is sort of an approach to policy, but it's really just a negative policy. And that's going back way before QAnon. I mean, the Republican Party of the Reagan years, is that what she's talking about? I get that it is better to have two serious parties that can debate each other, but that isn't just a matter of going back to before Trump. They weren't that then. I don't know how we get them to that point. I would argue the only thing I can think of that maybe has a chance is to beat them into submission and cause them to not win any elections for 10 or 20 years.
Yeah.
Maybe something will come out of that. Probably not even then, but maybe that's a possibility. And if she gets, if it is about they're the party of insurrectionists and everything, then I hope she understands that that's not going away, that they're going to approach whatever next elections they lose the same way that they did this one. They're trying in states around the country, as we've been covering, to make it harder and harder to vote. Now they have a bill, the House Dems have a bill to enshrine voting rights and all of that stuff, but they're not going to pass that unless they kill the filibuster, and they don't currently seem willing to do that. So she's like complaining about this status quo while presiding over a party that's not willing to do what's necessary to actually change it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there is nothing to get back to. It's time to remake the whole thing. But like, this is where we are. We're at the mercy of, can you at least not side with people who want to hang the vice president? That's it. This is the point that we're at. But you're absolutely right. Between the gerrymandering and the ways that the Senate are tilted in the Republicans' favor, the way the Electoral College is tilted in the Republicans' favor, the game is absolutely rigged in their favor, which is why, once again, like dragging the impeachment trial out would have maybe delayed real relief, COVID relief, perhaps, right? But it is definitely what Republicans would have done, shoe on the other foot, because they don't believe in getting anything done except giant tax breaks and destroying any kind of social welfare state that is left. That's it.
Yeah.
And circus. It's circus, and crapping on poor people. That's it. That's all they do, and preventing anything from moving forward. So it's like, it's hard to know, because like, we want to play the circus too, but we also want to, like get people hot dogs in the stands. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. I'm just gonna put an image up, and I just want your thoughts. If we could go to this Ted Cruz image that was apparently screen capped from a C-SPAN video. What is going on there? I don't know what that is. It's not a mullet exactly. What is it?
Oh, it's definitely a mullet.
I mean, it's mullet. It's too, like, a mullet is sort of a gradual, like that is a right angle. And I feel like nothing about a mullet is technical enough to have a right angle in it.
No, it's definitely a right angle. They started, that's a quarantine haircut. They start in with the buzzer and you're like, okay, well, can you leave? Ooh, or maybe it was like not enough time in the recess to finish it off. Just finish it. It looks like he's about to build a dam around his office. You know, he's a beaver, like, like gathering twigs and branches for the coming floods.
New age mullet. It's a possum in the front, beaver in the back. I don't know if you need to remove hair from the back or add hair to the front. Randomize it, honestly. Just start moving hair around. I think that you're gonna end up with something better. Is it possible that, like, he was looking straight into the mirror while they're doing this haircut, and they just decide, well, he can't see the back, so screw him. We're just gonna do whatever we want. Is it one of those things? Like, people show the images of like Meghan McCain from The View, and they say her hairstylist clearly hates her, and I don't know anything about that. But is this strike back? Is it possible he got his hair cut in the Capitol building, and those people who work there feel betrayed by a guy who isn't willing to do what's necessary to censure or remove a guy who risked all of their lives by sending a mob in? I don't know. Maybe this is the true insurrection, and it took place on his scalp. At the close of last week, the new White House deputy press secretary, TJ Ducklow, was facing calls for resignation over threatening misogynistic messages that were sent to a female reporter. At that point, TJ Ducklow had been suspended without pay for 1 week, which hardly seemed to match up to the things that were said.
Well, now, a few days later, message from the press secretary that we have accepted the resignation of TJ Ducklow after a conversation with him this evening. This conversation occurred with the support of the White House chief of staff. We are committed to striving every day to meet the standards set by the president and treating others with dignity and respect, with civility and with a value for others through our words and actions. TJ Ducklow also put out, that's a real name, also put out a statement saying, "No words can express my regret, my embarrassment, and my disgust for my behavior. I use language that no woman should ever have to hear from anyone, especially in a situation where she was just trying to do her job. It was language that was abhorrent, disrespectful, and unacceptable. I am devastated to have embarrassed and disappointed my White House colleagues and President Biden. And after discussion with White House communications leadership tonight, I resigned my position and will not be returning from administrative leave." He further said that he is determined to earn back the trust of everyone he let down because of his intolerable actions. Francesca, what are your thoughts on this update?
Well, I'm sure the Daily Wire will provide him with a movie that he can star in and act in, because he's been wronged by the cancel culture. Mm-hmm. And I am happy to provide it. I mean, look at this. This is exactly what happens. You have to apologize for every little move. You know, she's you know, this is what women have to always be taken care of. I'm trying to do Shapiro. I don't know if I'm.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, thanks. I don't have my underwear all the way up the crack, so it's not bunched. And so I think that's how you
hashtag
get the sound.
Show us the
hashtag show.
Come on, Ben.
Yeah, show us the Ben undies.
I don't want to finish it.
Look, it's nice that like we're back to a White House that actually like has some humility. Humility, just basic humility. You know, it's saying that you're gonna destroy someone coming from inside the White House, like that's not good. Don't say that to somebody.
Yeah, or
and
that,
it was over a romantic relationship, am I right?
Yes, it was over questions that were being asked about a relationship that TJ Ducklow was having with an Axios reporter. And TJ Ducklow was saying that the female reporter who had been assigned this story was only asking because she was jealous of the Axios reporter and that some man had sex with the Axios reporter that didn't have sex with her. None of this is acceptable. So look, two things I think are true simultaneously. One, good. This is, I think, what people wanted and they did it. And I can't imagine under the previous administration that this would have happened. I mean, Trump stuck more with the wife beating press guy he had than they did with Ducklow, which is good. That said, yeah, his apology strikes me as, we'll see where he tries to pop up again. I'm sure he's just trying to like protect himself, and that's fine. And by the way, even the thing from the press secretary is like, we strive to meet the standards set by the president, which is why we knew about this story for a couple of weeks and did nothing until it came out. And even then tried to just suspend him. And when that wasn't enough, only then did we ask for him to resign. That's how we strive to meet the Biden challenge. It's fake. And that's not what you were doing. You were doing what people do, which is you tried to get away with not doing anything until you had to. But that said, they did get him to resign. So huzzah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I thought the whole communications team was all female too.
I had heard that too. I mean, I guess I heard that too. I don't know, maybe he was a late hire or they were talking about some other subset of it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, this is
closer to all female now.
Yeah, I'm glad. I think that's important. I think that's good. Like, hey, standards are important. At the same time, once again, we just got done talking about a party that literally won't condemn a violent insurrection against themselves, against the Republic. So I don't know, like we're not playing the same game. That's the other thing. Now, I don't think the answer is to be like, nah, take no prisoners, no humility, whatever, just blaze forward. Like that's definitely not the course. But once again, we're in these two different realities. And I'm glad that at least there's some decency left in one of them.
Yeah, exactly. We've just closed out Valentine's, and people love to share like clever Valentine's. Like our team put up some awesome ones on the Damage Report's Instagram that were very clever. Some people don't really get the point of that though. And now the Los Angeles Police Department is investigating reports that its officers were sharing an offensive image that mocked George Floyd's death, allegedly a photo of Floyd's face with a Valentine's Day card style caption that said, "You take my breath away." Now, if you are one of the few people in the world who aren't familiar with who George Floyd is or why he died. Died back in May 2020 after he was arrested, and Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin knelt on his neck for a total of 8 minutes and 46 seconds. 2 minutes and 53 seconds of this was after Floyd was unconscious and non-responsive. Chauvin and the other three Minneapolis Police Department officers who arrested Floyd have all been fired and are awaiting trial later this year. So George Floyd died as a result of that. That sparked protests across the country about police brutality and the police not caring about the lives or deaths of certain types of people like George Floyd. And so to share this seems to make the point of the people protesting there, Francesca.
I mean, this is disgusting. It's disgusting, and yet it's par for the course. This kind of stuff happens all the time in police departments across the nation, right? And I mean, like, we can talk specifically about the LAPD separately, but I just want to talk generally about there is a through line between what we saw on January 6th and the ways that racist memes and racist posts, like what we saw from the LAPD, are connected. Right? Like, we know that a huge percentage, a disgusting percentage of people who stormed the Capitol on January 6th were former or current military law enforcement, right? And according to experts, it all comes back to the fact that a lot of the sensitivity training and racial awareness trainings within police departments are insufficient, and that the police brutality cases, the cases of civil rights violations, are actually there's never justice in those cases. The BLM movement is right that when you actually have consequences for the brutality, for the death, for the senseless murder of someone like George Floyd, that then that trickles back to like the entire culture of police generally, which is a culture that regularly shares racist stuff like this, that dehumanizes black people, that thinks that it is okay to make jokes like this. So it's all part of the same system of accountability. And if we don't have basic, look, I mean, this is not a joke. This is not a joke. If you don't have basic accountability for something like this, or for the posts, the social media posts that these officers do in private, then you're never gonna have accountability for the murder of someone like George Floyd.
Yep. And they're investigating. LAPD put out a tweet saying they've become aware of allegations that an image was being you've become aware of it. What are you, like an AI running a robot? It's happening. It's like every word is designed to put distance between them and what their people are doing. Anyway, there are also allegations that the post of the image was authored by a department employee. Blah, 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 blah. Our investigation is to determine the accuracy of the allegations while also reinforcing our zero tolerance for anything with racist views. That's what the LAPD chief Michael Moore said, vowing that his officers would find my wrath if he confirms that they were circulating the image. And we'll see. Wrath forthcoming, I'm sure. And I don't know, it's like George Floyd died. It's getting on towards a year. And LAPD officers think that it's funny to share that stuff. You know, the officers in Buffalo who brutalized that protester, they ended up getting off. And along the way, when there were even the possibility of charges, they all quit together. Like, these are people that are incredibly resistant to any reform, stick together 100% of the time, and yet seem to really believe that all of the calls for reform are fundamentally unfair. Like, the people sharing that image think, how dare they say there's something here that needs to change? Like, they hold those two positions simultaneously, and that is the issue. You cannot expect them to moderate themselves or them to fix it, because they are the actual problem. There are people that need to be weeded out. This needs to be rebooted from the ground up. And I don't think that this investigation is going to solve it. I don't. I think it's probably going to prove absolutely nothing. But even if they do pull out one person, that doesn't fix a culture that thinks it's funny to joke about people that cops kill.
Yeah, and like, why is the LAPD like being mealy-mouthed with this? Is it because that this happens all the time and now we're just finding out about one instance of it? Why isn't that tweet just, this is a disgusting tweet and there will be action taken immediately when we find this person? Like, this is not okay. The LAPD, you know, stands in solidarity with the Black community. I don't know, like, say it's not okay to joke about murder. Say anything like that, right? Yeah. But no. It is, again, you know, there's a code of conduct in Senate that we've seen, right? There's a code of, it's like a military conduct among Republicans. They all have each other's backs, they stay in line. And the same thing with the police. And I mean, here we are almost a year into this pandemic. And the most response that we've seen from our government in this year about the pandemic has been in response to demonstrators upset about the murder of George Floyd. Helicopters, police cars, endless brutality on demonstrators. Cool, thanks. These are the priorities, people. This is where we're at. But again, if you root this stuff out, if you hold one police officer responsible, that does trickle down, that does send a message. I do think we can remake these departments. And I think that the call to defund the police, yeah, man, you got too much time on your hands. Why are you sharing memes, bro?
Yeah, seriously. And one of the things that there was some success on over the last year's elections, but previous elections too, is you know, bringing in like new DAs and things like that. That will help, yes, a little bit. It's not direct embedded change inside of it, but for you know, a position that is often held by people who are, you know, incredibly easy on the police, sort of goes along with them and all that. That is important too, and that has actually been happening.
Yeah, Michael Moore now needs to resign also, BT Dubs.
Yeah.
Police Chief Michael Moore needs to go. Goodbye.
You can read those tweets, three tweets, and have no idea what it's about.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's about George Floyd. I don't know if it's about murder. I don't know that it's about race. I don't know anything. I guess, did they say something about it? Doesn't even say that it was racist. I have no idea what it's about based on that. I don't know. Did someone have a virus on their computer and they're really like ashamed at their lack of cybersecurity? I don't know what these tweets are about.
But you know, sorry, I mean, I realize we've belabored the point, but I just want to say, like, actually inside police departments, they don't really name racism. They might say racial sensitivity, as I did earlier, or like, you know, bias training, but the language of racism, which somehow is seen as racist even in of itself, that doesn't enter into, you know, police language when it should. When we know it should, and we see the consequences of not understanding that racism is a system. Doesn't mean it's you, it means it is a system. And yes, officers of color can also participate in that system. Then we can better understand and tackle it, but they have no language for that. They're the arguably most racist, you know, purveyors, or the purveyors of this racist system have no language for understanding the system that they're part of.
Agreed. Little bit of good news, kind of, on the pandemic, although it's the sort of good news that always feels like the more you talk about it, the more likely it is that good news will be replaced with bad news. But the case numbers are actually dropping for the first time since November. Average new daily coronavirus infections in the US fell under 100,000. It's been months. These figures are well below the average daily infection rate of 200,000 for December and nearly 250,000 in January, which is madness. Just this Sunday, researchers reported 83,321 new infections and still over 3,300 deaths. So as the cases fall, the deaths are falling, although as always, there is a lag on that. So hopefully, if it continues in this direction, those deaths will be going down in a few weeks too. And as of right now, the US has recorded more than 27.5 million virus cases and more than 484,000 deaths. Those are the actual ones we know about. 27.5, a significant chunk of the entire population actually got tested to show they have it. God only knows how many others have had it to this point. So a little bit of good news, Francesca.
I guess, I mean, what are we doing about it to make sure that those numbers stay down? It's like, we just go with the wind. Well, yay, today they're down, tomorrow they might be up. Who knows? We're not gonna do anything different. Like, it's insane. Australia had like 20 cases and everyone's in lockdown. Everyone is in lockdown. They had 20 cases. Like, I would give anything for 20 cases and an actual serious lockdown. It's maddening. 83,000 case new infections. That's not good. No, that's terrible. Anyway,
it is terrible. It is terrible.
The other thing I just want to say is, like, look, I do think there should be a criminal case brought against the former president for killing and almost 500,000 people. Seriously, like, we know how many of those deaths could have been prevented. So well, many of those
40%,
deaths,
according to Lancet. But yeah, we might talk about that a little bit during our top 10 list in a bit. But
yes.
Let me give you a little bit more mixed good news and bad news. So good news, the US is now administering more vaccine doses every day, up to an average of about 1.7 million. I believe that's over the past week. So we have ramped that up. Now, 1.7 million would still take a very long time to vaccinate everyone. The downside is that as of right now, that number might not be sustainable because vaccine supplies aren't meeting the way that they're being rolled out. So for instance, in last week in California, where we are, they announced that they would soon become one of just a handful of states to expand vaccine access to people of any age with underlying health issues or severe disabilities. But California's already used 72% of its doses, and there's some shortages in some areas. So for instance, here in LA, we've turned a couple of places, like I think Disney's gonna be, but Dodger Stadium and the Forum are these max vaccination places. But Dodger Stadium had to shut down over the weekend because they ran out of doses. Mayor Eric Garcetti said that the city received just 16,000 doses last week, roughly a day's worth. 16,000 is like two blocks in LA. That is not enough. We've lost thousands and thousands of people just inside of this county, more than a lot of states. And it's just they're not producing enough of the vaccine, or if they are, they're not distributing it. So it's good that they're going through the ones they have, but they have to keep a steady flow or we're not gonna be able to maintain that. And even maintaining it isn't good enough. 1.7 million shots a day is not good enough if you wanna end this pandemic in the next 3 or 4 or 5 months.
Oh man, my kingdom for a national healthcare plan. I just want it plan. Hey guys, let's shut down all the military bases and just turn them into hospitals. Let's wind down our nuclear sites and make them into vaccination centers. I think that would be safe, maybe. The point is that our nation is completely backwards when it comes to priorities. And you know, the fact that COVID is hanging on and that there's some, you know, reports that are like, well, maybe this is just gonna be life now, which is really painful to think about and really hard. But at the same time, what a great wake-up call. We know climate change is just life now, and we've got to get that under control too. Maybe we should redirect our national priorities and our funds into things like healthcare, into things like stopping climate change, into renewable energy, et cetera. Like, our priorities are, it's just so laid bare what we need to do. And it's gonna take a long time. It's gonna take a lot of work. But man, it'll be worth it because we'll be able to like socialize and be with one another and all be healthy.
Yeah, maybe if we start to recognize that Russian tanks and Muslim terrorists are a little bit less likely to kill us than the climate changing and the ever increasing number of variants of COVID. We'll see. A little bit of progress, but still obviously a long way to go. Hello and welcome to the weekly top 10 list. This week, it's me and Francesca. Hey Francesca, how's it going?
Hello.
Glad to have you here. And we're gonna be going down our list of the 10 things Trump should have been impeached and convicted and removed and banned and banished to an island or buried underground or whatever for. A mix of some serious, maybe some not so serious things. Obviously, he did a lot of bad stuff, but if it was up to us, what would he have finally faced the ultimate consequences for? And I wanna thank you before we get into the list for being a member of level 2 or level 3 and getting access to this. Thank you so much. We really do appreciate that. We hope that you enjoy this little bit of extra content we do for you. And of course, we are always down for your suggestions for lists. So feel free, if you're watching this right now on YouTube, you can comment down below and leave it and I'll check. And perhaps you could get a shout out as the progenitor of a list for next week. So that said, Francesca, would you like to start us off with your number 5?
Progenitor.
I should be impeached for using that word.
Progenitor. Yes. First of all, I just want to say the premise of this top 10 list is I like it. It's bad. And it's leaving. Goodbye. No. I am definitely not of the mind that we should impeach or should have impeached him over a bunch of stuff. I'm of the mind he should have never held office in the first place.
I disagree there.
Sure. That's up for discussion. Like the problem is once he's in power, it's like, we elected a fascist. And that's this, a lot of this is what we get. I'm definitely not of the mind that like, if we had brought a case that had all of these things that suddenly the Senate Republicans would change their mind. Nothing
on this top 10 list will provide us with the magic powers necessary to produce that. Unfortunately, I wish that it was otherwise, but anyway, whether it would have worked or not, this is our little hope. What would we want? So what's your first little hope?
My little hope is just the use of the long tie. No, I'm kidding.
It's too long, buddy.
Too long. Impeached. No, he should have been impeached for violating the Emoluments Clause, which says that you can't get rich off of your own position in office, especially the executive branch, right? And he consistently had members of the military, members of White House staff, like Mike Pence's staff, stay in his hotels when they were traveling. One of the many ways, obviously, his kids running his business and yet being part of the government and making money from that, that was always shady. But the explicit, like, you, when you visit Ireland, you have to stay in the Trump resort or the Trump whatever and eat their crappy food and have a bunch of ketchup on the steak. Like, that to me was like a no brainer. You can't do that, buddy. You can't. And that's not okay. You've got to actually relinquish that.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Yeah. Right out the gate, great minds think alike, because my number five was personally enriching himself through the presidency. And the reason I chose is both because corruption is bad, okay? We should do something about it. But also, this is one of the ones that it's very specific in the Constitution. You can't do this.
Yeah.
But the other stuff is like, we'd have to actually make a case. This is in there. And they couldn't get him on any of this stuff. You cited a bunch. There's others as well, but like, no, the enriching himself, the emoluments, the foreign leaders staying in his properties, the jacking up of prices before he sends people there so that he's making more money. It's madness. It's not acceptable, or at least it shouldn't have been. So that was my number five as well. What's your number?
Agreed. Number four. The family separation stuff, I think, was a bridge too far, even for this, wannabe fascist. When you separate children at the border, when you cannot locate their parents, when you've got no plan for reuniting 3-year-old kids with their parents, when there is audio being released of these kids crying and screaming for their parents and swearing that they have the number memorized of their family members in the States. And if they could just call them, I'm gonna cry right now, but that is criminal. It is absolutely criminal. That's a high crime, that's a misdemeanor. You had no plan to bring these children back to their family members. You get impeached, that's it.
And it wasn't just a consequence, it was the goal to produce this disgusting, cruel, horrific thing.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna go from your number four, which is incredibly serious, to mine, which is admittedly, some people are gonna be bothered by this being on the list at all, let alone above the violations of the Emoluments Clause. But I would have tried to impeach him and convict him over Sharpiegate, honestly, because that's fucking insane, you crazy bastards. How could you do that? We just moved on. He drew with a Sharpie on a map of a hurricane to cover for a lie. And I get that that doesn't kill anyone, that doesn't bankrupt anyone, But at a certain point, there has to be a line that that's too crazy to be acceptable. If he's doing that, that can't, that's, there's no way that that's the only thing he's doing like that. That is obviously part of a brain that is so broken that you can't trust it, even with things as simple as paper or Sharpies.
Yeah.
And so if you lie about that, God only knows what other official facts and documentation you're lying about. It's just too crazy. If I at one point in high school, I managed a toy store in the mall called Wound Up. And one of the main job things you had to do was we sold these monkeys that their hands like clasped together so you could hang them from things, just like a monkey. And so you would hang
like you and I now. We're just monkeys.
We're just monkeys. So we would like stand in the hallway of the mall with monkeys hanging from our arms. If one of my arm monkey hanging people sharpied on an official document to cover up for a lie, I would have fired them. And that is arguably a less serious position than POTUS. So you can't do it. You can't do it. So Sharpie.
God, what kind of manager? This is the worst toy store manager ever. Have a little fun.
The entire chain went under, but I had fun with it anyway.
And then Toys R Us eventually went under. Man, remember toys? Everything's fine.
My whole life is board games, which are effectively just toys for adults. But anyway, what's your number three?
Agreed. Well, similar to that, I guess, the handling of Puerto Rico, right? The handling of Hurricane Maria and the aftermath and the utter negligence that the Trump administration showed to the people of Puerto Rico. Just throwing bounty at them, like that's done. You're out of here. Sorry, I'm tangled up. You're out of here, impeached. But yeah, I mean, like that's criminal negligence for sure. There's thousands of people who died because in that hurricane. You withheld, I believe, aid that they needed and like made it stipulated on a bunch of other crap. I don't know. I don't remember the details because it's so painful. But would have impeached him over that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Same as like Trump's reaction, to what happened in Louisiana. Like you, at a certain point, you can fail bad enough that that becomes criminal, like effectively. Yeah. Like the Capitol, like there were people who resigned from the Capitol Police over the 6th. So like we get that there are consequences for things. Maybe we should figure out who should suffer them. Mm-hmm. My number three was actually close to yours. Mine was family separation because it was such an intentional thing that caused so much needless human suffering. Because it can't be fixed, there will be kids that will never be reunited with their families as a result of this. The fact that they lost kids, a president who loses kids shouldn't get to still be president anymore. It was purposeful and needless cruelty. I wish that they had gotten, that they had done more about that. There was a little bit of investigation or whatever, but I understand that was before they took over the house. But that was one of the darkest moments of his first term and definitely merited better consequences.
It was an international war crime. I mean, not war crime, but it was an international crime. It was like a human rights violation on UN scale that they were raising red flags at. So.
Exactly. What's your number two?
My number two.
Toilet paper in his shoe.
yeah. When he had toilet paper, putting the squeeze on Raffensperger, right? Putting the squeeze on the Georgia Attorney General and Secretary of State, to find him 7,000 more, whatever it was. All I need is 7,800. No, you can't do that. See, because that's not how democracy works. You can't just call up. And we didn't impeach him on that. That was like right up until like right before January 6th that we found it. What was it, John? Like a week, 2 weeks before the like siege?
2 weeks before. Yeah.
Like insane.
Yeah, it was definitely still in people's minds. But I guess when he sends the violent mob in, it's like, oh, I sort of find the phone calls quaint at that point. But yeah, you're right. And he's being investigated on that. So
maybe there will be consequences.
Maybe there will be consequences. Absolutely. But what, like, I do think we cannot let go of all the things that happened, especially the things that had to do with this election, because it's absolutely true that, like, there's now a blueprint for you can. And I'm curious, you know, I'm curious to see if others will be able, like, is this just a je ne sais Trump? You know, is it just you're right? Like, is it just the grace extended to a megalomaniacal celebrity billionaire, like, emblem of white male privilege? You know, like, is it just him, or can other people, like, bite off that snack? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I hope so. I think a lot of people, whether they're talking about it or not, do assume that to some degree, maybe not totally, that it is. But I don't know. Marjorie Taylor Greene's popular.
Yeah, I mean, people like Ted. I don't think Marjorie Taylor Greene can get that far, sadly. But I think that people like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are like, no, I want to bite off of that. Like, I can do that too, you know? And we have yet to see. I'm not sure. I think there's something uniquely Trump about Trumpism.
I hope so.
I hope.
Well, my number two is actually the one that they tried to. Hey, I'm allowed to agree with them. The whole Ukraine thing, yeah, no, he should have been convicted over that. Like, and they tried, to their credit. And I worry that with his most recent impeachment, that everyone's gonna forget about the first one, but he tried to blackmail a foreign government into launching a sham investigation against who he thought would be his political opponent so that he could win the election. That's not good, and that's not okay. That's really bad. If none of this January stuff had happened, if he hadn't done all the stuff in November, December with the election cases, that still would have been one of the worst things a president had ever done vis-a-vis an election. Yeah. Now it's like a distant second, but that was really bad and really well established at that point. He skated, you know, with only one Republican actually voting to convene. Like, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski were okay with that. They were okay with him doing that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was really bad and totally merited conviction.
Yeah, it definitely needed. I know this is like impeachment or conviction at this point.
Anything?
I don't know.
Anything.
Either of them.
What about your number one?
Number one.
The thing that pisses you off the most.
That doesn't. I think I know your number one, so I'm gonna sort of like deliberately not use your number one.
You can use it.
I don't want to skirt your thunder.
Okay,
fine. I'll use it. I was gonna say, I do think that the murder of, I was trying to remember his name, but Michael Reinhold, the so-called Antifa member who, he was basically working security for Black Lives Matter and did kill a member of the Patriot Prayer and then was summarily assassinated by police. Basically, and Trump, I think, admitted that he put the hit out on this guy who never saw a day in court, who was never brought to actual justice. There was no investigation. He was just murdered. You can't just murder, you can't just assassinate people because they're part of your political opponent. So that was really chilling. And that I think we should investigate more. And I definitely think that is not okay. You should, that's a crime. That's a misdemeanor. That is being the head of a mafia.
Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't even remembered that one. That was Duterte shit right there. That was,
yeah.
It's not like he called up a detective, was like, go kill that guy, but he made it clear he wanted this guy killed. They went and killed him very obviously, and then he talked about it positively. That's not acceptable. That's not remotely acceptable.
That's exactly right. That's death. You know, I was just watching Judas and the Black Messiah about the killing of Fred Hampton. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can still get back to that. Like, this is just some like some FBI BS, but like the ways that they murdered political leaders. And that was Trump's. That was like not even the FBI. That was just Trump saying, we want this guy dead. Which imagine what that said to the Patriot Prayer folks. Imagine what that said to all of his far right extremists.
Oh, I'm sure they got the message.
Yeah.
Well, my number one, and notably, it's not on your list, so this didn't bother you at all. You were totally okay with all of this. Let that be noted in the history books. The number one, and there shouldn't be a single person watching this that couldn't predict what this is gonna be, the response to the pandemic.
There has never been a president who has failed worse and more people have died as a result of it than this. Like, presidents have failed in a lot of different ways, but at a certain point, your failure becomes murder. Like, we can say maybe he didn't intend to kill any particular person, but and it wasn't a one-time failure. He failed and failed and failed and failed with many people dying in between, lots of advice being given, clear, obvious things he could do, criticism for the bad choices he was making, and he just kept failing and failing and failing and more people died. It's gonna be the US Civil War death toll in the end. Yeah. We will have surpassed any of the worst conflicts of American history. And it's not illegal. Like, the guy who smashed, he left a refrigerator open and vaccine spoiled will suffer worse legal consequences than Trump in the end.
Yes.
That's crazy. Like, you get a lot of power and a lot of privileges when you become a leader, but there's also supposed to be responsibilities. And at a certain point, you don't get to do what you did and not spend the rest of your life behind bars. And I know that he won't. It's sad that he won't. But if he gets to do this and suffer no consequences, there's nothing a president can do in our life that could ever be worse. So he should have 100% been impeached for it, convicted, banned from office, sent to jail, locked up. That's it. You never see him again.
No, absolutely, man. You know, we had a 9/11 commission. How many 9/11s is this?
Don't try to get in on this. You didn't put it on your list, so you clearly don't care.
I don't care. No, but I this is what I was going to say. It's like, it's too big. It's too important. And so, like, on one hand, I'm devastated by what we saw on January 6th, and he should absolutely have been convicted. But, like, I also want a full accounting of all the missteps under COVID. Like, we absolutely need that. There needs to be justice. And he, thank God there aren't 4 more years. How many more people would have died? But not only that, just being told time and again that your reality is not reality. These people aren't dying from COVID. What? What are you talking about? Just that debasement that we've gone through. I agree with you. I agree. It's criminal. Yeah. It is criminal. Like, at what point is it criminal? At this point, at 500,000, maybe at 100,000 deaths, it was criminal already.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of bad things about his presidency. If COVID had never happened, he would have been a terrible president. But with COVID, he's the worst. I don't think that there's really a debate to be had there. Because George W. Bush would not have done what Trump did.
No.
He would have flubbed it. Yes. More people would have died than necessary, but he would not have done all of this stuff. He would have put a mask on and he would have done it so that it covered up his eyes by accident. And we all would have laughed at him, but he'd have put the mask on.
Yes, he would have said it was serious. They still would have opened up, you know, businesses and tried to put the market needs first, but he wouldn't have been talking about injecting yourself with bleach.
They would have used it to attack China in some way. They would have done xenophobics. There would have been lots of bad stuff, but they would have actually treated it like a crisis. And we didn't get that. So that's my number one. And I assume was in the teens for Francesca. So anyway.
How dare you, you bitch. You bitch.
Francesca, as always, thank you for joining me for this.
Thank you so much, John.
And thank you everybody for being members and making this possible. We enjoy doing these. We hope you enjoy it too. We'll see you in the next one. Over the last few weeks, the United States has seen a shocking rise in both violence and harassment against Asian Americans. And joining us to discuss this and related issues is the co-founder and CEO of Hate is a Virus and Better Brave, Tammy Cho. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you. We want to hear your thoughts about what's been going on in the news recently. But I did want to start off with your organizations, because you co-founded the organization Hate is a Virus last year, when we were seeing quite a bit of discrimination and harassment as well. Can you tell us about the path to starting that organization?
Sure. Hate is a Virus is a nonprofit and community of mobilizers and amplifiers that exist to dismantle racism and hate. We first started as a grassroots movement last April in response to the first spike in hate crimes against Asians due to COVID-19 last year. And in the past year, we've produced national awareness campaigns, educational resources for our communities, and raised over $30,000 to go back to essential BIPOC organizations across the nation. And this year, we are continuing our efforts to really amplify, educate, and activate our API community to stand for justice and equality, and also stand in solidarity with other communities as well.
So last year, around the time that you were starting the organization, how bad did it actually get? What was it like for people across America during this time?
It was rough. I think part of it was also fueled by the rhetoric that was being used by folks in office. There were over thousands of reports of hate crimes just last year alone that spiked due to this type of rhetoric. You know, folks were getting yelled at, kicked for, and spat at for wearing masks in public. I personally also walking through the streets of Koreatown experienced hate as well, where I would be walking down the streets and someone would yell, "F Asians, F you," and start kicking my car. And so, these events are just absolutely not okay. And this is why we started as an organization, and we've been continuing to work in partnership with many, many other community organizations to raise awareness of these issues and how these issues continue to spike.
So I remember during the first few months of the pandemic, you had people both in the White House and in the media that seemed to delight in talking about the origin of COVID and coming up with what they found to be clever, funny little names for it and things like that. And they would say when there was pushback, I remember we talked about it multiple times at the time, that no, well, it's just accurate. You know, they called it the Spanish flu. Like, we're not doing anything wrong by saying this. So based on your experience actually talking to people affected by this, that sort of coverage actually made a difference. It did lead to, or at least contributed to, some of what you saw.
Absolutely. Culture starts at the top. And a lot of times when, you know, the president or other folks that are in office are using this type of language to describe the virus, it enables and empowers others to continue to use this harmful rhetoric and be able to use this excuse that, you know, oh, we've named it the Spanish flu before, but clearly there are implications with the spike in hate crimes that we've been seeing since last year and that have been continuing to escalate this year.
So considering that you co-founded an organization specifically about this and you were doing activism about what was going on, were you or anyone else from your organization reached out to by any of these programs to talk about the issue?
Could you share more about the programs that you're referring to?
So for instance, like I can think about, you know, Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham were, you know, using these mocking xenophobic terms and implying that it's insane to imply that that's connected to any harassment or violence. I'm curious, since they were so sure of that, if they reached out to activist organizations like yours to give your perspective.
They had not. They had not reached out to our organization. And in fact, you know, we've been seeing a major lack of coverage about these hate crimes within mainstream networks. And again, very happy to be here to be able to shed more light on these issues. You know, it wasn't until very recently where, for instance, Amanda Nguyen, another activist and founder of an organization called Rise, put out this viral video really campaigning for our communities to speak up on social media and drive awareness about these hate crimes that mainstream outlets started to pick up on these stories and decide to cover them. And so it is so imperative for us to continue to work together to drive awareness of these. And we continue to ask different mainstream outlets to continue covering our stories and making us heard.
And what about more recently? We're seeing, you know, attention is being paid to cases like in Oakland, this 91-year-old Asian man being attacked in a video that went viral. Are things actually getting worse, or is this now the media is starting to recognize what's been going on?
That's a great question. it has been getting worse. And there have been thousands of reports in this past year. You know, Stop API Hate collects some of these reports, and there have been over 2,800 reports since COVID began. And this doesn't even account for a lot of the underreporting for these hate crimes due to fears of uncertainty about what will happen. You know, there's also language barriers for a lot of these folks who are experiencing these hate crimes. And you know, these are stories and incidents that have been going on constantly on a daily basis for this past year. And I think it's just the media is starting to pick up on these stories now.
And you know, obviously we're talking about actual violence and harassment that you were talking about too. But also I've been wondering, you know, Asian American either led or owned businesses, I can sort of speculate that there could have been strike back against them. Is there any reason to believe any evidence that this is having a monetary or fiscal impact on businesses from your community?
Absolutely. So, you know, when the pandemic began and shelter in place were ordered, or actually long even before shelter in place was mandated, small businesses, Asian owned small businesses, experienced over an 80% drop in revenue. And this was, you know, this was tied very closely to when this harmful rhetoric was starting to be used. People were scared and blaming a lot of these Asian, you know, Asian owned restaurants and avoiding the restaurants at all costs. And that impact continued to worsen after the shelter in place mandates were in place.
So we talked about a lot of different things that have happened over the past year. If someone's watching this and they want to help, they want to be of some sort of assistance in some way, what are things that they could potentially do to get involved?
Yes, there is a lot that you can do. So, you know, one thing I do want to point out is raising awareness would be really imperative. So, you know, the most powerful change starts from the ground up. And people are the key to movements and the key to change. And so raise awareness, speak up for us, right? Continue to spread the word about these hate crimes and what our communities are experiencing, whether it's through social media or even just in your day-to-day conversations with your friends. Another key piece that I want to encourage folks is to also educate yourself. Learn about the Asian American experience. You know, we are not a monolith. We have so many diverse cultures and experience and backgrounds, and different challenges that our community faces. And especially when it comes to the model minority myth that has been used to pit our Asian American community against other communities of color. And that all relates to these broken systems of white supremacy. And so we want to make sure to have these, you know, educate ourselves, have dialogue around this history to know how we can stop repeating that history again. And the last thing I would encourage folks to do is really find your own way to push for justice and take action. You know, this could be find one that resonates with you, right? So this could be protesting on the streets if that's your way, or it could be something like reading a book, how to be an anti-racist, to learn more about how you can actively internally do the work as well. And you know, there's strength in numbers, and it really takes all of us to continue pushing for change.
Thank you, very good advice. And if you're watching this, you're seeing the website for Hate is a Virus displayed at the bottom of your screen. Tammy Cho, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.